working out.
Watch the sunrise. No, I gotta
Sean,
make
the pain. I can hear it. I can hear it. I know what it is. I'm saying, what is it? Tell us what it is.
What is it? Oh, Zach Persons. He's one of my favorite artists. Out of
Persons?
Is there a
plural? There's two of them?
He's multiples.
Just one. So today's a special episode of our strange podcast. One, because we got to get rid of Johnny for a day. Thank God, right?
That was what I'm most thankful for.
I know that Thanksgiving.
From Thanksgiving yesterday.
But two, we brought in a special guest star named Zach Person. Zach.
Yo. What's up? Glad to be here.
Welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be home.
Yeah, you are home, aren't you? You're from here.
Yeah, yeah. Grew up here. I think we moved here when I was 3 years old. And then I was here for a decade before going down to Houston and then finally Austin.
Yeah, you're not living here now, though.
No, Austin, Texas is my home base for the time being. Yeah,
I'll give a quick basis on Zach. If you're just joining us, you don't know who he is. Zach's an American rock musician. Some people put him in that sort of blues, Black Keys category. I'm going to put you more in like a disco, funk.
Sounds about right.
Like the Wiggles.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought the other night. I was like, that's the Wiggles on stage.
Because he wiggles around a lot when he's playing his guitar. yeah, that's sort of cowboy stomp that I like the best. No, but Zach's a serious player. You play with a bunch of people. We'll get into that. But you just played a show at the Rooster.
Yeah.
The Neon Rooster just a night or so ago. And that's why you're still here. You haven't left yet. Be going back to Texas. But how was that show, man?
It was awesome. Neon Rooster, Derek, awesome.
I was going to say awesome job.
Yeah. Renovating the place. It's got, great acoustics. I was like well pleased with how we were able to pull off the loud rock band in the small intimate room, and it was a cool show, sold out show.
Yep.
When Sean over there, he was doing the sound for it. And like that's a juggling act too. For it is like it's an arena rock sounding type of band in like a 120 seat type of small like listening room environment.
Yeah, totally.
It sounded awesome in the room too. Like it was, I don't know, it was kind of like an arena rock show brought to like a small, 100 seat place. Like you guys killed it.
Yeah, definitely. The good vibes there.
Everybody had a blast. I mean, people were just blown away.
Yeah, I think everyone drank so much alcohol. It was, you made so much money that night, Derek. It was impressive. you was just jamming rock and people were having fun. And then you pulled that trick encore where you made me play on stage through your Mighty Blues Junior.
I've been dreaming about that moment for a long time.
It's a weird dream.
I may come to a YouTube video at some point.
Uh-uh.
Go up on YouTube.
I'm retired.
People have been scrambling. They want to see Baxter live on stage.
No way. I missed too many notes for that to go public.
He was in rare form that night, man.
That was fun, though. We had a blast. But you've played some, no offense to the Rooster, you've played some bigger venues, too. Intersect Festival. I want to get into that and some of the folks you've played with as well, so people get an idea of your routine and your route and what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big mix of stuff. The Intersect Festival specifically is a festival that was hosted by AWS, which is Amazon.
What is that?
Yeah, Amazon Web Services, and they did their first launch festival in 2019, December of 2019, and headliners on that festival were Foo Fighters, Spoon, Beck, Anderson .Paak, and we were.
You're right in that mix.
Yeah, able to be right a part of that.
And like my main thankfulness of that show is Derek and I flew out to that and we got to get some good footage of it. And that's a long story too. we'll just get in that later. But we got some good footage and it was. But I fell in love with Spoon from that show.
Absolutely.
And that was nuts, man. Like that, they're so good. And like watching you in the same like venue and stages as like Foo Fighters and these bands that are like pretty big. That's a big band. And like you were rocking it. You had a whole different lineup at that show though.
Yeah. It was a 4-piece at that time. You had Callie and Carl in our lineup, two bass and you know, pandemic set in, mm-hmm. and it worked out to come down to a two-piece.
So the pandemic cut your band in half.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
That's the effect.
I'll say that bass player, was a sharp-dressed dude.
Yeah, and one of the funniest dudes I've ever met.
He was funny. And you guys had, like, a little trailer at Intersect.
Yeah.
And, like, there's famous people walking around, and, like the heads of these major corporations. It was funny just, like, seeing you in that spotlight.
Yeah, I remember after the show, I was telling the guys, I'm like, this is, you know, this is what we want to do. We've made it, you know, for a night. You know, the only difference is that the rest of these acts get to do this every night. That's the reality every single day.
Well, that's kind of not true, because you're getting ready to go fly out like in a day to go do it again.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're doing another festival.
yearly event with Amazon called Reinvent. That's in Las Vegas every year. And, yeah, we were invited out to do that event. What else did we do this year? We did, ACL, Austin City Limits Festival.
You also had a sold out European tour.
Yeah. Yeah. We sold out half the shows on that run. And, it was still, we had, you know, no idea what to expect over there. And
who would have thought they would have liked you so much? Like you did some pretty big waves and moves over there. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Cool experience. I think over there, you know, people are, they really look to the music venues to see, you know, to see what's coming to town. If there's something that they're slightly interested in, they come out and give it a chance.
Well, you're a nice different mix for what they see in the European tour circuits as well. You didn't do UK though, did you?
No.
You gotta do UK. I'm gonna get you in Ireland. You gotta get to Newry and Northern Ireland and all those places up there. They're awesome. You gotta do that whole routine. So, yeah, then you've played with a few other cats. I want to get right into it. Sir Robert Cray?
Absolutely, yeah.
Just recently,
I had the chance to open up for him twice now, once as an acoustic solo act and then once as a duo. I don't know if they were exactly expecting the duo to show up.
No, you did it the acoustic the first time, right?
Yeah, yeah. And second time, we weren't sure. And ended up doing the duo thing. I think it was, again, like an unexpected sort of lineup.
Was the reception with the audience good?
Yes, yeah.
Awesome.
They liked it. And, you know, I think it was still a cool dynamic. I know traditionally, or I guess historically, in newer acts opening up for these legacy acts, it's typically more of a stripped-down sort of set. And... but I still think it was a great transition lineup. I mean, you can't take away like you know, an act like Robert Cray is so big and the legacy is there. It's like you can put anything before him and it's still gonna just like Eric Clapton. You know,
whoops.
Know, yeah. If you you know, if they come out on stage and you know, it's yeah, everybody's going to fanboy.
I'm excited you play in front of Robert Cray, but if you play in front of Eric Clapton, that's a different level up too.
Yeah,
that's like when Mario hits the mushroom and he gets bigger.
Who was his Joe Bonamassa? That was like his big, you know. He went up there after so many years or whatever, and Eric Clapton came out on stage with him. It was huge.
What's the same when Eric Clapton brought Robert Cray on stage with him and sort of launched Robert Cray out? It's, yeah. It's
you're the next in line, Zach. Get ready.
Oh, man. And he still got it, too, man. He voice playing sounded, you know, pro. Sounded awesome.
He's always had it. But, yeah. Sean, like, I'm curious. Did you ever hear of Robert Cray? Have you ever heard his music before?
I'm not. So, actually, I saw your post, and I was like, oh, okay. It seemed important, so I'll check it out. And then, you know,
no, but I think a lot of younger audiences, though, have not heard of Robert Cray. So, that's because the audience is probably, like, 40 to 50-year-old and up, and sort of primarily men, I'm guessing.
Actually, it was a good mix. It was a good mix, yeah. Yeah, he has a loyal female fan base as well.
He's a good-looking man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's good. Is he single?
I have no idea. I've gotten to talk with his bassist a lot, Richard Cousins. I don't know how many people know about him, but he's a phenomenal bassist and like the funniest dude ever. Actually, a funny story. The first time I opened up for Robert Cray, I was introduced to Richard Cousins, his bassist. Yep. And another friend, Larry Folter, is a bassist I know, plays with Taj Mahal.
That guy's insane.
Yeah, yeah, monster player. Bonnie Raitt, Willie Nelson, all sorts of names.
He also can hold his own weed, apparently, if you can play with those people.
Right. And
you're touring with Willie Nelson, it's a different level.
Yeah. And he came out to the show to see me, and thought he was, his name was on the list, and they're like, no Larry Fulcher here. And so he goes around the back, and he tells the story, hey, I'm Richard Cousins' parole officer. I'm here for his pee test. And the security guard's like looking at him like, what are you sure? And at that exact moment, Richard Cousins comes out the bathroom and looks at Larry, and he's like, oh, you're here already. And the security guy's like, I'm not getting in the way of this, and like just pushes him through the door. Yeah.
That's the way show business works. Now, you've also played with one of my favorites, Buddy Guy.
Yes.
Now, yeah. That's insanity. I think it's the first concert I ever saw.
Yeah, definitely.
That dude's still doing it.
He's amazing. That was kind of teed up through my relationship with Quinn Sullivan, and that just kind of goes into like, I don't know, another topic of how Instagram is connecting, you know, players of all over the world. And so I've had a relationship with, you know, Quinn Sullivan for years just via Instagram, and they came through, you know, our area of Texas, and Quinn is just like, come out, and I want, you know, you to meet Buddy. And
yes,
he's like, bring your guitar too. And got to talk with Buddy backstage and just listen to him for a half hour.
But
talk,
what's
about
what's that like though? Was it like sitting in a room with a magician?
It was pretty surreal. You know, you walk in there kind of like, you know, like tiptoeing, and you know, just like try not to say anything stupid or do anything.
Which you inadvertently always do, though, a little bit. I've known Zach for well too long, and he always puts his foot in his mouth. He's so good looking and so smooth, and then if you know him.
Mm-mm. Right. And yeah, it was just listening to him tell stories about like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Clapton back in the day. And then, you know, he's known for bringing people out if, you know, he feels good about them. And so he sure enough called me up, the guitar tech tuned my guitar up, and went out there, plugged straight into, I can't even remember what it was, just some big clean Fender amp, and
you know, that's it?
Just go, yeah.
Like no overdrive or anything?
No overdrive, just crank the amp direct in. And
it was cranked, though?
It was cranked,
oh, yeah. So you had the push.
Yeah, and I had a Strat with a one of those
boost,
like little the little humbucker, single coil sized humbuckers.
Okay.
So that gave me at least a little bit of a saving grace out there. But yeah, cool moment, really cool.
So you play with some of the legends obviously already, but you're living in a music scene right now in Austin. So I know I was talking to Derek earlier. He's curious about what the scene's like down there. At least that's what you expressed to me. Derek.
Yeah. Like you know, what clubs have stayed open, what ones have reopened under new ownership, you know, what is it like as far as, you know booking those gigs as an artist that is in Austin, and, you know, because there's so much competition, there's got to be more bands than there are venues, and that sort of has that shake out for new artists coming up through that scene.
Well, I don't know that I was able to ever, you know, experience, like, the historical part of Austin that people think of. I think I came in, like coming in 2017, I saw the very tail end of, you know, what was left, like the you know, candle was almost, and wick was almost burned out, and I saw like the very end of that. And like the Austin music scene is still diverse and like as rich as ever, I think, you know, in terms of the artists that are there and the music, musicians and people that are, even like, you know, visual artists that are there in town, like it's still rich and full of life. But the scene has definitely changed. You know, I think especially post, you know, COVID, it wiped out a lot of I don't know, things that you would associate with, again, just that historical dream of that Austin used to be. I think it's cool. You know, like I said, the scene is still there. There's a big tech presence coming in, a lot of corporations coming in, and it seems that music is still, it's still what people want to see in the city, but it's just coming in a different way.
Well, what's it like for a musician like you living there? Like, you make a living doing this. Like,
yeah.
You don't have a real job, as we call it. You don't have to do what we do. Talk about guitars all the time, but no. So I mean, you gotta pay rent, you gotta pay your bills. You're playing. Is there enough gigging opportunities there for you guys to survive?
Well, I mean, that's been an argument too. A lot of people have always felt that, like, you have to go outside of Austin to get your opportunities, and then you come back, and sort of Austin is where you live, and that's where your family and your friends are, and that's where the community is. But, you know, most of the, you know, in order to go past, you know, that sort of, you know, the Austin, like, bubble or circle, you have to go out into, you know, the rest of the world and the rest of the country, get the opportunities and come back. And it's always been, it seems like more recently, a home base for artists instead.
Well, it sounds a lot like the New York scene I was in the early 2000s. Like, yeah. That was that whole Strokes, Interpol, Yeah He Has Time, when, like, my little band and all those bands were, like, huge in the New York metro area. They were huge. I was, like, this little blip. But people knew who we are. And then the Northeast. But then, like, well, the rest of the country, forget about it. Come to North Carolina, nobody knows who you are. And you go to Texas, nobody knew. Canada, maybe. But is it sort of similar in that way?
I think so, too. You know, the thing I also see a lot in Austin is, you know, it's the... I don't know if it's this way in Nashville. I think I've heard Jonathan talk about that, like, where it's the, everybody there is in six other groups, and so that's how you can like, keep playing consistently night after night. Yeah, and, like, I know several specific guitarists and drummers that I see them, like, in every single lineup, a video funny. Comes out. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, Jonathan, he'll talk about it. He said everybody's goal was to get out of Nashville. So it's no matter where you're at. He's like, if you're a touring act, he's like, everybody thought that you had it made, and then you come back to Nashville.
So it's funny. It's almost, very similar to the New York Broadway scene, too, because everyone, like, moves to New York to get on Broadway. And the easiest way to get on Broadway is to do the touring, you know, national shows, like, in that go through North Carolina and Texas and Florida, and then you get hired onto a cast, maybe.
Yeah, so it's probably the same everywhere. Everybody's like, oh, no, it's different here because we do this. Like, yeah, you know.
But that's what you're not cool. Playing in multiple bands. You're just you.
Yeah.
You don't have time for that, it seems. You literally just got back from Europe. You had, like, a week or so downtime, it seems, and you got on the road again.
Yeah.
Like your Southeast tour, kind of.
Southeast, well, just east. We all the way up north. To New York.
And,
I did the whole scene, especially first moving to Austin. You know, I was doing exactly what I kind of just described. You know, playing every bar I could, beating up Sixth Street and Rainy Street. Shout out to Friends Bar, man. That was the first place that ever gave me a shot in Austin, and you know, it's still kicking. It's totally different now.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that a lot, though. Have they changed ownership? Or
I think it's same ownership. I feel like a lot of the places on Sixth Street have kind of it's become. You know, I mean, it's been this way for a while, though. It's become like a more of a just a tourist attraction. And there's still a couple spots on
and
there.
You were saying too, like, there's the skyscrapers are coming up, so, like, this cool roof deck bars are now, like, shadowed, and it's going to be a whole different vibe.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole kind of the whole argument right now. It's, you know, there's people that are wanting to hang on to what, you know, Austin used to be, and I mean, there's pros and cons to both.
Well, it sounds like Austin is going the way of New York and LA as far as it's not a city that can stay. How it is or was, it's gonna
have to continue to.
It's gonna have to grow, especially with all the people that want to live there now. And
The good thing, or how I try to look at it, is that there's you know, obviously things are changing. Luckily, some of the venues like Continental Club, Antones, Seaboys, on South Lamar. Oh my gosh, I don't know why I can't think of it, but David Grissom has his residency. There. Just tired early, can't think of the venue, but
that dude's so good.
Those places have been able to hang on, and I'm thankful that those places are still there. And, you know, you get some of that Austin nostalgia, but you know, I'm trying to look at it in the way of there's all these new opportunities that are coming. They're different.
That's
than
awesome.
What Austin used to be.
Well, you're gonna be spending most of your time out on the road, it seems, in this future part of the world now.
True. So
you're gonna be out there journeying. And exploring and seeing things.
yeah.
So Derek and I were talking earlier. Like, Derek's a big fan of reality television.
Like he loves it.
Like, all the time. He's like, you know, I like ridiculousness. That's my thing. You had a stint.
I'm a Tosh.0 guy.
Tosh is
good. OG.
You are old. Yeah. But Zach had a stint there, right?
Oh my gosh, I know what you're talking about. I was like, where is this going?
I know, I'm gonna get you, baby. It wasn't on, it wasn't on like Love Island. I thought that would be, you gotta stop moving around. This creaky chairs. Come on, you can't do that in here. We use old vintage stuff everywhere. We don't use effects pedals, but you know, Zach was on a reality television show.
Yeah.
I'll embarrass you a little bit.
Oh man. No, it's fine. I'll own it. Yeah. 2016 season 15 of American Idol.
It was a long time ago.
I was 18, just headed, you know, into age 19 when I did that show. So, you know, my plan was to go, you know, go to the local college and maybe the UT route, and right after high school decided to audition for Idol and made it and got kind of pushed straight through to
the, you made it far, man. Like I went up there to that sort of real audition with Harry and J-Lo and that other pretty person,
Keith Urban.
Yeah, I was like, that was another beautiful woman in there. I think it was
Keith. Yeah.
Yeah, he's gorgeous. That
was the thing too. People were like, was J-Lo as pretty as like, you know, everything looks online? I was like, I mean, sure, but I was more focused on like Harry Connick.
Harry was impressive. That's a tall dude.
He was glowing.
Yeah, that dude's like, that's a pretty man. Like, I was just blown away. I was like, cause like Keith's like a pretty man in a different way. Like,
yeah.
He's more, a little more feminine. Like, and Harry's just like a, like, if you're a man, like, you definitely don't feel like a man in Harry's presence. That dude's, he was like, he's ripped and he's talented and seemed like he, yeah.
But I mean, that whole experience was fun. I was coming from the place of being a guitarist who was like kind of forced into singing, and then Idol made me focus more on my voice and just performance as a whole. Started taking voice lessons and just a couple months before that audition.
Well, we enjoyed watching because we were all fans of yours from day one. And like, I remember having to watch you on American Idol. I was like, man, I can't wait for him to get kicked off, so I don't have to watch the show every week. Yeah. You know, because we wait for the come on, we have to watch like an hour and a half of like just horror shows. And
yeah,
and finally got the boot, which was all like, I think, good for all of us. But yeah. You did really well though. You made it far, man. You were in the top tiers.
Yeah, top, made it to the top 24 cut. And you know, at the time I was, you know,
was nuts.
Heartbroken. I think Sound and Color by Alabama Shakes was the song I had on repeat, like a girl that's going through a teenage breakup. You know,
such a little girl, Zach. I love it. Sensitive side comes out.
That was the best thing that could have happened though. I mean, they were really trying to shape me into whatever they wanted me to be for their show. And
well, it's a show, it's a TV show.
Yeah.
And my sister worked in reality television for a long time, and it's a television show. It's not exactly like, hey, we're just performing. I remember that when you were calling me on the phone that one time and you were just exhausted. They didn't let you sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just so they could get you on camera the next day.
Exactly.
And like, they were always trying to get him to open up, and he'd be like, nah, because Zach's cool. So he's cool. I'm not cool.
You always hear like the horror stories too. Like, it's better to be number two on American Idol than number one, because once you get that deal, it kind of like locks you into this thing that they want you to be for the next, you know, some people say like 10 years, like you're stuck there.
Absolutely.
Doing whatever they want, to where if you get to the number two spot, everybody wants to give you a deal, but you get to choose what you're doing.
Well, I'd even say like the time of American Idol and The Voice for helping artists is over.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, YouTube has destroyed that, and Instagram.
I was watching The Voice, and we stayed with some of Jake's family up north, and I was thinking, like, who is this show for? Like, you know, I think
it's about the hosts. It's not for nobody remembers the artist. It's all about like,
but like in terms of like somebody going on the show, like who would it really benefit? I think if you go on and you get a little bit of exposure, you get that TV, you know, audience, and then you come off like immediately, maybe then it's for like a working artist. But
that exposure and that experience, from what you were just saying, seems like it was huge for you. You know, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great growing experience for sure.
But it's tough.
I think The Voice, there's probably quite a bit more interaction with the judges than Idol, right? I feel like you really do maybe somewhat get to develop a little bit of a relationship with some of those judges.
But the rub with The Voice is like they have a season like twice a year.
Yeah.
Too. So like, if you don't, I mean, because we had that kid like local, Britton Buchanan from Sanford. He was like the second place runner up, and like he's, you know, he's still struggling and hustling out there like anybody else. It's not like it guarantees anything for you.
No,
it's a brutal gig. The reality TV stuff, I don't I'm just glad you're not on anymore. I don't want to watch it ever again.
Yeah,
unless it's like Hardcore Pawn or Lockup. Those are fun.
Selling Sunset.
I do love
Pawn Stars. That's what we're saying.
No, yeah. But we were talking earlier with Derek. We want you to be on Joe Rogan's show. You're like, you live next door to him, pretty much. Not realistically, because you can't afford his.
Probably like 20 minutes from that area. Yeah.
No, but like, I mean, like, you would be great on that. Like, you're funny.
And that sort of brings up another point of Austin is sort of, I don't want to say it's a takeover, but there's sort of a comedy takeover occurring in Austin. You know, you've got Joe down there, obviously, kind of leading the charge. But you got a lot of people that have moved there. You're seeing comedy scene is exploding. I think we're going to see maybe an interesting mix of potentially music and comedy kind of coming together.
That's what we're talking about with this young weirdo. If we can get Zach and some comedians working together. It's back when George Carlin used to do it. Like, that's amazing. Like, opening up for, like, you know, Kiss or something. How cool is that? It hypes the crowd up.
I mean, Steve Martin used to do it. The Troubadour. I mean, it's sort of a natural thing. And,
that's crazy because now Steve Martin, like, headlines as a bluegrass band.
Yeah.
You know, when he's with his, like, and he'll have, like, you know.
Yeah, and Martin Short or whatever.
Or, God, what's his name? The guy. The dude from Sling Blade. Billy Bob
Thornton.
I love him. I just went blank on his name, but like I loved all of his stuff from Goliath to everything. But like I remember watching that one interview with him when he was with the band, and he was like, if you ask me about acting, like then the dude did, and he went off on him. It was like, it's almost like a comedy show.
I thought it was hilarious. He got so quiet. He was like,
dude, Billy Bob is ruthless. Like that, he's brilliant. But man, it's like, so Zach, when you transition into acting, please don't. don't go crazy like that.
No, man. Absolutely not. But man, the comedy scene, like you're saying, is definitely growing. And throughout the, I guess, post-pandemic period, I've seen a lot of LA back and forth, LA yes. comedians coming in and kind of infiltrating the Austin sort of like comedy scene that's been there. And it's just been cool to see that.
No, you musicians need to like link up with these cats like the way that they used to in the 70s. That's a great idea. It's fun.
I mean, you never know when freaking Dave Chappelle may come up and just
sing with
come
the Foo Fighters.
And, you know, I mean, he's down there. I can't even imagine if Raleigh was like Austin, and at any given point, you could have probably the best of the best in the world coming there. You know,
okay, that was just like when I was in New York and I'd be at like the Comedy Cellar, which is I live right around the corner from it. It's the biggest stars in comedy would just pop in every once in a while because that's where they practice their set before they go out on the road, before they do their comedy special on Netflix.
Yeah.
And so you just, yeah, man, you might get some of those cats. Get some of these young up and comers. And there's nothing better than a terrible stand-up comic.
Right.
Like I love that show too because he's honing his craft. That's the hardest job in show business.
I've had a close encounter with Dave Chappelle. I was back when I was doing the residency stuff at the Fairmont in Austin. Yeah. I knew, and everybody knew Dave was coming to town. There was just kind of like a buzz, like Dave Chappelle is coming. It's one of the first times. I think it might have been for that first special that he released.
Yeah.
And we found out soon that he was staying at the Fairmont.
So what, do you stalk him or something?
No, okay. No, not at all. But I had my, you know, my, I guess it was a Wednesday or Thursday or something that I was supposed to come in. And, you know, there's that thought that, okay, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Dave is chilling and, you know, catches the set. I know he's, you know, friends with John. Let me pop in a couple Mayer covers or something. I get there, and there's this guy, this cool cat that used to play before me, and he does, like, gypsy jazz stuff, just all solo instrumental guitar. Awesome. And, like, I walked up, and he's like, yo, man, Dave Chappelle was just here. Like, he sat here, like, through my whole, like, you know, three-hour thing. And, like, all him and all his friends, and he was taking videos, and he was, like, you know, getting, like, the thumbs up and everything. He just left, and I'm like, oh, so close. And, so I end up doing my set. The place is packed, and like I'm like, and there's no way he's coming down here in this mob of people. And then I see a guy come down dressed super wild. I'm like, he's got to be, you know, a part of, you know, the celebrity crew, and he's I see him FaceTime, and I'm like, I think he's FaceTiming Dave to say this is what's going on downstairs. Anyway, fast forward to the end of the night, I'm packing up, you know, getting ready to leave, and then Dave, I see him come downstairs, and he's like, I'm at the end of this hallway, and he's walking towards me, and he's like looking straight on and looking at me, and like, I don't know if I was nervous or if he was nervous, but...
Because he might have been nervous you were going to rob him or something. Or no.
And he's coming straight at me, and there's a security guard walking about 6 feet behind him, and I'm like, okay, prepare yourself. You got to say something. You got to say something. And I'm like, what do I say? Like, hey, man, I just played. You missed it, but it would have been cool if you were there. And like,
going through all these, you said that.
All these scenarios, and he gets like... right up to me and like is just staring me in the eyes, like, you know, with his hand in his pockets, and I was just like, sup.
sup.
And that was it. And
that's a good Dave interaction. That's me. At least you didn't like go like fan crazy or anything.
No.
I mean, I might have like asked for like a handshake or a high five or something else. Like, yeah, that's good, man. That's a cool little moment. Dave Chappelle.
Close Encounters with Dave, yeah.
I mean, we all love that crazy cat. So we know where you're going next. You got that Amazon thing coming up where you play in front of a bunch of cats at like 8 in the morning for this next one, and then you got some other. What's after that when you get back to Austin?
Oh, man. Just doing a couple of local city events, some private, some public. One thing at ACL Moody Theater with Black Fret. It's a really cool organization in Austin that's supporting Austin musicians, cool. Giving out grants, just doing a lot of great things in the Austin community, and then kind of some downtime. Finally.
Don't have too much downtime. You got to make some more music.
Yeah.
You got another album you're going to start cooking on, right?
Yep.
That's good, because I got your last album. It's good. It could be better, right? Yeah, you know, I think it could be. Like, I hear you live, I'm like, man, like, I want to hear that.
Yeah.
So like, I'm excited to hear the next record.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Your live performance, like, nobody knows. It's just a two piece, and the drummer is the other half of the band.
That's his band. It's one dude,
and it's like insane. Your drummer is crazy.
That white dude is sweating the entire time. Like, he's like, he's playing keyboards, like.
Drums,
yeah. Playing some Journey
baseline,
over here.
Like,
yeah. Got a track that he's working off. You know,
he's definitely driving the boat. That's all.
Yeah, you just get to be up there and be pretty and dance around.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
That brought your songs so much to life. It was crazy. Like, I listened to your album, I was like, okay, this is good. But like Baxter said, the live feel that you guys brought with that, it was like, okay, yeah, this sounds way bigger than this room, you know? Like, it sounds like an arena. It sounds huge, you know?
Yes.
Yes. You know? So, that's a big goal of the next record recordings, is to try and capture that in the studio.
That's what we want to hear. Because I always harken back to, because, you know, I like this little band called Oasis. No, most people don't know that. But that's when they recorded their first record, and it was a flop as far as within their, they all hated it. And they're like, what's wrong? So they went back and got their live engineer to mix it and record it. And it was like, that's the first Oasis record.
Yeah.
Like, it took them, they recorded the whole first record, and then they scrapped it.
Yeah,
it was dead and sterile. Not like you were dead and sterile.
Kiss, but MC5, all these bands who, like, you bring, like, a true rock feel to what you're doing. I think that would be huge, is that live sound. What you guys do is amazing. Like, if people go and saw you live,
yeah, man, it's like,
you would win everybody over. I'm sure you do win everybody over because it's awesome. You know?
Thank you, Sean.
That's a nice
play guitar.
That's,
man,
a paid promotion. And like, and by the way, while we're speaking of that, if you hadn't had Longhorn Steaks from Steak and Company, they're great. I'm just kidding. We don't have any sponsors yet. I just wanted to act like we had a real endorsement. That'd be cool. But no, we don't have that, unfortunately. Man, Zach, it's awesome talking with you, man, this morning. I appreciate you coming in and hanging out for a bit. And we got like another few hours with you before you go off in the universe. But you guys got anything else to ask Zach? Or?
No, just thanks for coming down and ending the East Coast tour at the hometown at the Neon.
Absolutely.
That was pretty damn
was
special.
Awesome. I loved it.
Yeah. As Sean says, it was dope.
It was dope.
It was dope.
I would say what I usually say, but I'll say it after we get off the
podcast. And Derek says, that was lit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those are Derek's catchphrases.
Lit. Yeah. That was fire.
That was fire. I will punch you in your exposed kidney if you start saying that.
Here's to many,
and
many
since
more.
We talk about TV a lot on our channel and stuff, what was that show you and I were watching last night?
Oh, I Think You Should Leave. It's on Netflix.
It's a funny sketch comedy show. Have you seen that, Sean?
No.
Dude, check it out later tonight. Like, I'll put one on. Like, it's hilarious. Funny. It's kind of like The Whitest Kids You Know, a little bit like a new telling, or like Mr. Show with Bob and David. It has that sort of feel to it. There's an airplane out there outside the studio here. The studio. I did quotes in the air. You can't see it. There's no video. But Zach, man, thanks so much for coming. We love you, dude. We're excited to see you guys.
Thank you for having me. Here's to many more of these discussions.
Yeah, man.
Exciting things ahead.
The exciting things for all of us. We got you. We'll get you on the video cameras as well, maybe, and make some fun of you.
I would love that.
Yeah, that's it, man. Well, thanks for coming in and partying with us.
Peace.
Is that a sneeze?
It's a sneeze.
You sneeze at the end?